Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on this episode, Fan of History. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie.
How are you today?
I am really happy to get into this story.
You are?
Yes. But first, some formalia. Is that a word in English?
Formalia, like formalities.
Formalities. So we moved Confucius to the 500s.
Yeah.
So he's not in here. We have also nothing from Rome again.
Wow.
In the 530s, Servius Tullius will get murdered. So there will be Roman stuff in the 530s.
Okay.
But in order to get an episode in the 560s, I had to use everything I had on him before his murder. So Rome will be back next decade.
Yay, Rome.
And then, one important piece of news. There is now a new way to support the podcast. It's called Fan of History Plus. It's somewhat like Patreon, but easier to use. You get your personal RSS feed that you can put in any podcast player.
Hmm.
And there are some technical benefits to it. So there's a link in the show notes. So I've set up one basic level for Fan of History Plus, and we might add another later. But for now, there is a level that says support the show and get rid of the ads.
Okay.
And it includes a picture of Bernie with great muscles in his arms, standing in front of an Assyrian relief.
All right.
So this is $4 plus VAT a month. And for that, you support the show. We don't have any way of interacting with you through this interface. But you get a personal RSS feed, and on that feed, there are no ads. You get rid of all the ads in the show.
Well, fantastic.
And I'm thinking about archiving the earlier episodes. We have noticed that people listen a lot to episode 1, 2, 3, and 4 of Fan of History. Those episodes are almost 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not happy with that being the first impression of the show.
Yeah.
But I'm evaluating Fan of History Plus, this software for other podcasts. And it might be a couple of months before we introduce another level. But that level would be access to all the archived shows.
Okay.
Pretty much. And also possibly early access to shows we have made but not published yet.
Oh, all right. Yeah, we could come up with a lot of good little giddy goodies. If you some things you guys think of, let us know for sure.
Yeah, but if you want to support the show and don't like Patreon, now you can use Fan of History Plus. There is a link in the show notes.
That would be great.
$4 a month, that's all we ask. And no more ads.
That would be fantastic. I would really like to get some of those sponsors. We could use the help. I have to pay for some subscriptions and stuff like that so that I can find this information. So anything you guys could do to help, yes, that'd be awesome.
Okay, back to business in Greece.
Back to business in Greece. And there, I'm using like two computers here. I have two mouses. Is it mouses or mice? But anyway, it's funny. I've talked in the last episode, how everything's sort of merging together and are sort of following Herodotus. And Herodotus goes all over the place. He goes in backward and forward in time, geography. He's good. I mean, that's just the way he did it because I feel like he was telling a story and it kept it interesting. So we're breaking it down as best as we can, too. So this episode's going to be on Greece and Carthage, but there's just getting to be so much more overlap. The only overlap we don't really have right now is China and the Americas.
And in India.
And India, yeah.
There will be Indian stuff in the 540s.
Yeah, so the Far East and the Far West, but all in the middle. They're really starting to get a lot together. You know, like a lot of stuff's all happening together. It used to be, you know, we talked about the Assyrians and we didn't know about the Greeks, but now the Greeks and the Neo-Assyrians or the Neo-Babylonians, which are like the new Assyrians.
People are meeting up, connecting with each other. I'm sure it will all turn out in a nice, happy way.
It really probably will, Dan. It probably will. It will.
One good way to promote the good connections between different people is, of course, sports. Do we have any sport news?
We do, at least the Greeks, because the Greeks, you know, they may be fighting with other people around the world, but they fight plenty along with each other. And now, currently, we are in starting with the 58th Olympiad, and we always do that. And so we have our first... is the stadium. That's the main one. That's the race. And that's won by Diognetos from Croton. Croton is in southern Italy. It's one of those Magna Graecia colonies.
Look, people are traveling across the sea to compete in the Olympics. This is connection.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's this Olympics has kept the Greeks connected. And then as the Greeks moved into the Western Mediterranean and the Eastern, you know, the Black Sea, they still traveled to the Olympics. And that where the Olympics were in Elis was kind of like a backwater. And it was quite a journey to get to the Olympics. You know, and they weren't very comfortable, especially at this time. Like as when the Romans were more involved later, it got more and more like a comfort thing. But people died on the way. It's a brutal, but they went. They went to the Olympics, and it was not televised. So the first one is the stadium is a very popular one. That was the race, and like I said, that was Diognetos. In the same year, we had the chariot race, which is called the Tethrippon, and we have a guy named Ugaros, and he is from Sparta.
Nice to see another Lacedaemonian win.
It is. And
good work, Sparta.
Yes, and this guy actually, and someone just blasts his name every time, right? He wins that in the 58th, which was 548 BC. He wins it again the 59th, which was 544. And we have that he won it in the 60th as well, the 540.
He's the prime chariot racer in the world in the 540s BC.
Yes, in the Greek world anyway, but I would say it's probably because, you know, they're not really using chariots in battle anymore by now. Well, some people are because we know Alexander the Great fought against chariots, but They're not as common, especially in Greece, in battle. And I mean, I didn't even look at before or after. I have to take a look. Maybe this guy won, you know, later. But like I said before, the chariot races, I mean, he wasn't the charioteer. He was the owner of the team. So that was sort of how that works.
So he can be winning for like 10 more Olympiads if he's lucky.
Yeah, he could win forever. It'd be like a football team, you know, like they could keep winning, but they have different people.
He's the oligarch owning the team.
Correctamundo. And we move on to boxing, my sport. And we have a guy named Proxidamus, and he's from Aegina.
And this is in 544 BC.
Thank you. Sorry, yeah. That was the 59th Olympics in 544. We got another guy from Corcyra, which is, or Cyra. Yeah. They have spell, these different spellings. And he won the stadium, and his name is Archilochos. Again, like I said, the Spartan won. And we have boys boxing in the 540s. We're getting to one that's really important here, though. So boys boxing, we have in the 540s, we have a guy named Leocreon. Leocreon, he was from Chaos. K-E-O-S.
Where's that?
I'm not sure. I should know. I think it's somewhere on my Assassin's Creed, if I recall. Being in Chaos. So I think it's on the mainland. I don't think it's an island. We'll look it up.
It is, in fact, an island.
It is an island. How about that? Oh, there is an island of Chaos on Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I don't believe I've gotten to it yet. It's in the dark area.
It's southeast of Athens.
Yeah, okay. Chaos. Here's the big one. This is the great. I've been waiting to hear talk about this guy a little bit since I kind of when I started this podcast, because the guy I used to be our swimming coach for boxing, Ken. I haven't seen him in a while. When I told him we had a podcast, he said, "You know this Milo of Croton?" I was like, "No, tell me about him." So I'm going to tell you. In 540 BC, he won the boys wrestling. Milo did. This was his first victory. And becomes quite legendary, Milo of Croton. Croton, again, is in the south of Italy. He won the Olympics 6 times, so we'll know he wins. He won, and this one as a boy in 540, and then he won 5 more. He kept competing well after what it normally would have been. So by the 67th, he didn't win. I don't know if he competed in it. He would have been over 40 years old.
That's 28 years later.
Yeah.
Than this.
That's what it says here. Says. That's what the people on screen say.
What does it take to be a boy in the Olympics?
We talked about this. We weren't really sure because people didn't know. Pretty much couldn't have a beard, I think. So probably under 18, but well, good enough under 18.
Maybe he's 14 here and 42 in the 67th Olympiad.
Yeah. I'm glad I have a math person here to help me with that quick. I didn't even double check that. Yeah, so he'd been over 40. So he was strong, apparently. He's historically a person, we believe, because Aristotle's talked about him, Pausanias, Cicero, even Herodotus. So he's probably a real person. But there are legendary stories around him. One of them is in the 510s, so I'll save that one because it's a crazy story. And his death, which was tragically and comically epic. You'll actually see like statues about his death because they use it to show his rippling muscles and whatnot. But here's some of his feats of strength that he supposedly took a lot of pleasure, you know, showing off. One is he would hold his arm out with his fingers outstretched, and he would challenge people to attempt to bend just his little finger. He would stand on a greased iron disc and challenge people to push him off. He would also hold a pomegranate in one hand and challenge others to take it from him. Nobody ever could, and despite him holding the fruit real tight, it was never damaged. Those are three I had never heard of until just recently, but this one is the one Ken used to tell us about all the time. The story, and you may have heard this, I don't know. Some of you guys may have. The story is that he would train by taking a newborn calf on his back, and he would put it on when it was a baby, and he would walk around with it all day until, like, the Olympics took place, and by then it was a full-grown cow. Now, that seems a little, I don't know. And this is great. He carried the full-grown cow the length of the stadium, and he proceeded to kill it, roast it, and eat it.
That's a bit macho.
Yeah, I would say. You think we're macho guys today? This guy comes in the stadium carrying his cow, slaughters it, eats it. All right, who's next?
Who wants to wrestle with that guy?
I know, literally. He's like Hercules. They say he dressed like Hercules. He walk around like that. So he was quite a character. Quite a character. He must have been one of those, you know, like the strong men of DC, the 1920s, the 1800s. Big strong wrestler guy.
So we'll hear from him again, Milo of Croton.
Yeah, not too much. There's a little story, but it's in the 510, so let's do it then. There's so much anymore, too. So I hope you guys, you know, let us know. Like, we don't need all this detail, but I mean, that we do 10 years at a time, I figure I'm going to give you a lot of detail.
Yes, please.
So we are going to go back to our friend Pisistratus. Remember him?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Pisistratus is like, you learn about him in school and stuff even. There's a lot of information about him because this is like, you know, the prelude start of Athenian democracy. But he was no democrat. He was no, you know, real hell. He kind of was. He was a tyrant, but he was a populist. So if you remember, he was gone out of town for the second exile because he had been making love to his wife, not on a Marduk's mattress emporium. He was making love to her. Maybe he was on one, but he was doing it in an unnatural way, according to Herodotus, and it was a scandal. And because he didn't have babies with her, and he was gone. They kicked him out again. So he left with his two sons, Hippias and Hipparchus, who will become important later. And he started plotting to make money and come back to Athens and take power. So he spent, this is about 546, and he left sometime around 556-ish, something around that. So he's been gone for about 10 years. He got involved in mining, making deals with people, et cetera, and he had some money. So what he did was he got a bunch of mercenaries, and he came back, and he landed on the beaches of Marathon. And so now they said him and his family and his, he always had a lot of close family links with the villages in that area. And he was also, if you recall, like a populist, and a lot of people liked him. He was, you know, sort of like a Trump type of figure, but he was a populist and people liked him. And so they supported him and he had his mercenaries, but he built up, so he got some people came too. We had those, remember, he had the rich people, Megacles and Lycurgus, and those hard for Bernie to pronounce names that were in power in Athens. And they were the oligarchic people. And they were sort of haughty. They thought, well, what's this Pisistratus, this stooge going to do? You know, he was kind of their stooge before. They say that possibly the two times he was in charge before, some historians theorize that he may have just been like a figurehead, you know, that's why he couldn't really have a lot of his own power. So then what, these 10 years while he was gone, he learned how to, you know, he made all these plans. So he lands on Marathon with his army and his mercenaries, and the Athenians get some people together, come out to meet them. But they were like taking their time. They didn't seem like they had much of a plan. And they stopped and had lunch and breakfast. I think it was breakfast, right? It says they're having some breakfast. And then so Pisistratus, he had some oracles that told him he would catch the tuna in the net, stuff like that. And so he went and he caught the Athenians just lounging around. I think they were taking naps. In fact, Herodotus does say they were taking naps too. They were eating, taking naps, just chilling out. And he came in with 1,000 crack Argive hoplites and Theban cavalry, and he just like routed them. Some of the Alcmaeonids were killed right in the front line of battle. So they left. The Alcmaeonids were only in for a little while back in the city, and now they took off. So then Pisistratus had his sons ride after the fleeing Athenians and say, hey, there's no problem. Pisistratus is your man. Just go back to your homes, go to work, do your thing, and everything's fine. Nobody's going to slaughter you. You're not going to be slaves, nothing. Just go. So they're like, great, because obviously they just got like, I mean, could you imagine a bunch of mercenaries come in, you're having breakfast, and you're just sort of like a citizen soldier. So now he's in. Pisistratus is in completely. I wanted to bring this up real quick, and I like you probably have something to say or ask me, but do you remember we talked about it? I kind of didn't even realize what I was talking about at the time because I just sort of, you know, go decade by decade. The prophecy on Pisistratus was his father was at the Olympic Games in like 608 or 604, and when he was sacrificing the meat, the water and all boiled without a fire. And so they said he should never have children, and if he does, have a son to disown him. But he didn't, and Pisistratus' father obviously didn't, and then he became Pisistratus, the tyrant of Athens.
Well, he must be really old at this point.
No. So that was his father was just at the games, and he burned the meat without fire, but we don't know when he had the baby. He just said, like, he just saw his father. In other words, so that was like 40 years ago, right? 608 is like 50 years from...
60 years.
Something like that.
I see this note that Pisistratus fought under Solon in 596.
Oh, yeah, he did.
So he must be at least 65, 70.
Maybe he is old by now.
In 546.
You know, that's the thing with the years. So, and he did fight under Solon. I believe we talked about that. He was Solon's lover and probably Solon's nephew. And Solon hated him. He just thought, you know, because he was a tyrant. But it will turn out that Pisistratus will be regarded by Aristotle and others as one of the good guys.
Was that because he upheld Solon's laws?
Yeah. He upheld all the laws of Athens, actually. But he did it in a way that was... So that's why those people think he's good. He did it in a way he would have his own judges in. Also, what he did now, after he had this, won this battle, he took, you know, the aristocrats, he took their children and had them sent to Naxos as his hostages. So if anybody gets out of hand, you know, kind of has that hanging over you. I mean, you know, for the ancient world, when you have like Assyrian kings just slaughtering you, cutting your ears and noses off, putting them in piles, you have a guy just taking your children for hostages, I guess sounds better, and following the laws and installing his own judges. Basically, he was as corrupt as hell. But for those days, that was saying something. Instead of being, you know, just an outright tyrant in quotes, because as we've said before, a tyrant just means you take power, you know. So, yeah, also what he did, though, he was a populist. So a lot of his rulings would favor the rural and the poor classes. So they loved him, you know. And a lot of these guys are illiterate and stuff. And they think he's amazing. He instituted this, the Pan Athens Festival. That was probably started in the 560s, but he really pushed it. You know, it's like they love having these festivals in Greece. You know, if it's like, you know, if you have footballs on Sunday and Monday, they're like, well, maybe we can get on Thursday too. You know, so they were like, hey, maybe we could have a festival or everybody wants to have golf tournaments, that kind of stuff. So all these festivals are popping up around Greece, but Athens being, you know, consolidating Attica, the whole peninsula at this time, they had this huge festival. He supported the arts, culture, drama, stuff like that. And this is pretty interesting, too. This is when the Iliad and the Odyssey really get written down, a final editions, because even if when you read Herodotus, you'll hear him talk about different versions, like, oh, well, I, you know, some versions, this happened in Egypt, and some versions it didn't. And because the Greeks, you know, they, like, thought that they could trace their lineage back to these different characters in the Persian War, like this city was Agamemnon and this city was Ajax, etc. Pisistratus sort of and his people they wrote it into like they put it into like a, what's the word, like a Bible, basically. You know, here's what we say it is, and so this is when so that's why some people say there was never such a person as Homer. You know, all this stuff was being written down in the 600s and then finalized in the 500s, but he did that. He, you know how the Romans are into bread and circuses?
Yes.
Yeah, he did that. You know, he kept the people busy so they wouldn't be interested in politics. He'd loan money and give money so that they could have farms and be really busy. But he increased the economic output. So, like, things were just going really well. And like I say, he didn't change the government officially. He just sort of ran. Oh, he controlled all its levers.
It seems that the Athens of the next century is sort of getting formed here.
It does. I was thinking today, like, imagine if you were in, like, New York City in 1850, maybe Stockholm, too. I'm not as familiar with it because, you know, New York's more of a newer town, city. And then to 1950. I mean, it's such a huge difference.
Oh, yes.
just getting built up in the 1850s more. And by 1950, I mean, of course, there's technology involved and everything, but I just think of Athens the same way. And like Athens used to just be the city state, but here now they're it's becoming a real estate. You know, it's like Athens is the capital of Attica, that kind of thing.
So Pisistratus, the tyrant of Athens, what's happening in the rest of Greece?
So this other amazing thing happens. And this is why, because when we talk later, like Herodotus mentions something, goes, well, they wanted to do this, but this is what was happening in Athens, and that's Pisistratus. And then he says, and then they wanted to do this in Sparta, but this is what was happening in Sparta. This is great. Crazy. Could be true, too. Some truth to it anyway. You remember the Battle of the Fetters, Tegea, when the Spartans tried to invade Tegea, and then they ended up losing and getting chained up?
Yep.
Then got the bones, and then the Tegea became an ally. So they weren't fighting with Tegea, so Tegea become more into Sparta's sphere of influence. And just like Athens and Attica is growing their region into a regional power, same thing with Sparta. So when it took over Tegea, now it's bumping up to Argos. So it's because this Argos and Sparta always had this little buffer zone between them, but now they didn't. What happens is Thyre, Thyreae. That's how Herodotus, it's spelled in my translation, Herodotus. So just it's this town area, a plain in between Sparta and Argos. And so they're Sparta invades and Argos comes out to defend, to fight them. And so they decide, they come instead of fighting right away, they decide, they say, hey, how about we pick 300 guys on our side, 300 guys on your side, and we fight it out. And who's ever left has, you know, left standing on the field, that will be the victor. Sounds good, right? So you pick your 300 best guys, I guess, and your 300 best guys on the other side. And if you ever, I know I told Dan I've been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is set in ancient Greece, and you have these conquest battles, and it's just like that. It's like all these guys just fight each other, stab at swords and whatnot. So they have one of these. They have this big battle, 300 on one side and 300 on the other. And apparently they fight all day. All day, these guys is fighting. I can just imagine. And it comes down. There's only two guys left from Argos and one guy left from Sparta. And now, whether they know the one guy from Sparta is still alive or not is different. People say different authors, ancient authors say different things. People say the one guy maybe didn't. They didn't know he was dead and he was just wounded or we don't know. So, but anyway, there was two left from Argos and one from Sparta. And the two from Argos figure they won, so they go back to the camp or back to Argos, wherever the army is. Oh, because I wanted to say, I did forget a little part. It's not super important, but before the battle starts, each army agreed to not be near, let it happen, because if they were seeing one losing, one might be tempted to come in. So they were just the 300 on each side, all the armies are gone. So the two from Argos, they feel they won. And they go back and tell, you know, to the camp or to Argos and say, you know, we're the winners. One guy left from Sparta, he goes and takes off all the dead body from all the Argos soldiers, takes all their armor off them, loots them and everything. And he brings them back and he says, you know, we won. Just me. I'm the only one left.
So both claim victory.
Both claim victory. They come back and they both. So guess what they did?
They had to have a regular war instead.
Yeah, they had to have a regular war without their 300 best soldiers on each side, I guess. And Sparta won. And Sparta probably has a better bench.
So these 597 champions that died in vain.
Yeah. And the last guy, the guy from Sparta, he killed himself. They either kills himself on the field or he goes home and kills himself. I mean, for whatever, my opinion would be PTSD. Serious fucking sorry, but PTSD, serious. Could you imagine? 600 people, you survive it.
Yeah. But I can't help but note that there are 300 Spartans.
All right.
What's up with the number 300? It's like Thermopylae all over.
Yeah, and how about the Sacred Band of 300? I don't know if anybody knows. I mean, it just hit me when I was like, I mean, I knew about this thing, but it just hit me this morning when I was tightening this up. What's the significance of the number 300?
I also think about the fact that both Sparta and Argos are Dorians, and they're like the brothers that can never...
Yeah, so maybe there's a Dorian thing that's the 300.
Sounds reasonable, but we don't know.
It divides by 6, right? Sort of. 60 is a number.
Mm.
Does 60 divide by 300? 60 times, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5. The 60 is a number, you know. I don't know. We'll find out. Every culture's got their numbers, that's for sure. And in those 10 years in Greece, I imagine other things happened. Of course they did. And there could even be other things historically that happened. But honestly, I think that as we go more and more into these decades, you know, I think we'll try not to, like, bore people with every last final thing. We can move on to Carthage.
I think we could do Carthage in another episode, actually.
We probably could.
But we could talk about the end of the Age of Colonization.
Yeah. So, officially, they say that the Age of Colonization ends in 550 BC. There's probably some random colonies founded here and there, but honestly, most of them will be founded by other colonies. So it's not like, you know, their scramble for Africa or the scramble for the Mediterranean. I really think that's what it was like. It just took a lot longer. You know, the scramble for Africa by the Western powers, and then you sort of had a scramble for the Western Mediterranean by Greece. And Greece was like the Western powers because, you know, in the Western powers, you had France and Germany, and especially England and Spain, Portugal. And then here, you know, you have these different Greek city-states. Some of them speak different languages. There's about 4 different languages at least. And you have the Dorian-Ionian conflict. So it's kind of like that. It was, and then, of course, the Carthaginians, which were the Phoenicians, were already there. And so they are also scrambling now, changing the way they do things. So really, we could say that we won't have any new colonies. We usually do a new colony. Probably won't have any more of those going forward.
So this means that the Mediterranean is colonized by either Phoenicians or Greeks.
Pretty much.
And now we have to... That sounds like it's ready for conflict.
It does, doesn't it? It's like next phase of the game. It's ready for conflict.
It sounds like a video game where the colonization phase is over. And now it's game on.
Exactly. It really does. If you were playing, would you? What do you think? Would you have the Carthaginians as their own civilization? Or would you... Like, could you have the Carthaginians, the Phoenicians, the Greeks, whatever? Or would you have the Phoenicians be the Carthaginians?
No, I would have the Carthaginians be their own civilization because they haven't been beaten down by the Assyrians and Babylonians, which the Phoenicians have.
That's a good point. My opinion now and I've been reading a book on Carthage, and it's so funny. I'm reading the book on Carthage, and then I'm trying to get to this part of the this era, and there's like... Zero. A huge book on Carthage. It's everything I already had. It wasn't even, that was it. So I think, I might disagree with you and think that the Phoenicians were, you know, I think that they kind of moved to Carthage starting at this point, but not per se. I think up until this point, it was sort of the same. And then by now, because we'll talk about in our Carthage episode, some changes, because I feel that by now, because of what's happening in the Near East, the Assyrians had been in charge of the Phoenicians, but they really let them have a lot of their own authority. That's why I think they kept smacking them down every so often. You know?
Yeah.
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I read from historian that it's probable he feels that a lot of the reasons that they even went out west like that and kept going and finding all this silver and such was to please the Assyrians. In Carthage, they still have to take 10% of their earnings and take it to the Temple of Melkart in Tyre.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because we have seen people move from Phoenicia to Carthage already during the Assyrian era.
Right.
I was reading ahead into the time of Cambyses, so this is kind of a spoiler.
Yeah.
But when Cambyses, the son of Cyrus, wants to go to Carthage and conquer it, the Phoenicians won't sail there.
Right, yeah. And that's not too bad of a spoiler. You're all right to say that one. So, but that's, yeah, they wouldn't. So, I mean, that could be like, you know, New Yorkers don't want to attack England because it's that by that time, because another 100 years later, not really 100 years. Like, you know, so, yeah. I mean, we did that interview with Dr. Mailheimer, and they called themselves Punic. That's what their name, or their name was Canaan. They called themselves Canaanites, and that's what the Carthaginians called themselves too. So, I feel that the Phoenicians sort of merge, become the Carthaginians, and the pressure from the Greeks and later the Romans, of course, they become their own. You know, it's completely different from Phoenicia by the time they're the Carthaginians of the 200s BC.
Our next episode, we will dive deeper into Carthage.
Let's do that. Yeah, let's wrap this one up and dive into Carthage. I will let you say any final words, and then we will close.
If you like to support this show, you can do it on Patreon, as we've always said. But now you can also do it on Fan of History Plus, and there are links to both in the show notes. On Patreon, you select an amount of money you want to per episode. $1 per episode is quite great. And on Fan of History Plus, it's $4 plus VAT. And then you get ad-free episodes of the podcast.
I think it's worth it. I'm going to sign up myself, maybe. So I don't have to listen to the ads. But the ads for Marduk's Mattress Emporium, they'll still get squeezed in.
Yeah, they're hard-coded, so they cannot be avoided. But all the external ads will be avoided.
Exactly.
Check out our Facebook page and follow me on Instagram, Dan Horning, with an umlaut over the O.
Right.
I'm the only one in the world with that name.
That's amazing.
So, Carthage, next time.
Let's do Carthage next time. Carthage must die.
Yes. Oh, it will be a long time before Carthage dies.
Okay. Well, see you later, Dan.
See you later.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.